Hello, friends. Welcome to the Neighborhood Church Podcast. You can go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org to get more information on how you can get even better connected. Have a good and beautiful day. Enjoy.
All right, friends, that was amazing. I love doing child dedications, and I think it's really important that we have a community of people, that we have family and friends, but we also have a community of people that's willing to invest in one another. So I am continuing our series. It's going to be okay, baby. I believe in you. So we're continuing a series called For the Bible Tells Me So, and the whole idea is that maybe you're here and like the Bible to you was something that you know exists and you're not, maybe you've not read it, or maybe like me, you were grown up with going to, what do we call it, King's Kids, right? You go, King's Kids, and they teach you how to memorize stuff that you'd forget, but you get candy if you memorize it, so that was the important part, right? But there's these stories that I was told when I was a kid that are really beautiful, but there's also something deeper, there's something messier, there's something richer in these stories that I want to take time to go through. So 2 weeks ago, we went through Jonah and the fish, not the whale, because it doesn't say whale. And then last week was my wife, Nikki, did Adam and Eve, the creation story. And today, we are talking about Noah. We're talking about Noah and the ark. And of course, where we have to start is when I got my driver's license. When I got my driver's license, I was 16, and I, like every other 16-year-old in the world, thought they had all the answers, right? It was like, just give me the keys. And I should pause. Who let me drive a car at 16? I mean, what were you guys, my parents were here, what were you guys thinking? I mean, I don't know if I could spell my middle name correctly, let alone get in a vehicle that can go like 100 miles per hour. And so my very first day, I don't even know if my parents know this story. My very first day of having my license, I drove out to see my girlfriend, who's now my wife, Nikki. You're welcome, Nikki. And on the way home, there was this brown car, and it was going a little slower. And I'm like, I'm done with this. I've been driving for like, I don't know, 2 hours, and I have places to go. And so I'm like getting right on aggressively on the tail of this car. And so as soon as I can pass, I get in the lane, I punch and I pass. And I want to look this person, I let them know who they're dealing with. And I drive and I look in the eyes and it's my grandma. Myrtle Olson. And I just felt like, yeah, for sure, I'm going to hell. This is just how... If this is how it works, it's already guaranteed. And my grandma, little old grandma, I don't think she recognized me, all right? But she did not give me the finger, Mom. I just want to let you know, my grandma, right? And so I just keep driving. I'm like, oh, I'm a horrible human being. So, of course, like a week later, I'm driving, and I am driving way too fast because I have important things to do. And the police officer disagreed with me, all right? And he pulls me over, gives me a ticket, and all this within 1 week of having my license. So I felt really bad. I was talking to my friend Steve. I said, Steve, I don't know, why did I get a ticket? And I think I've shared this before. And he's like, well, Chris, did you tithe? I'm like, what? He's like, did you tithe? I worked at Walmart. I made about, I think, $4 an hour, all right? But I was a lawn and garden specialist. It said on my tag, I was a specialist, all right? And I said, Steve, no, I didn't tithe my $25 check. And he's like, well, Chris, see? God's going to get his money one way or the other. And I believed him. It's horrible, right? But I literally believed him. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. That if I don't tithe, there's a God who's very concerned about my $2.50, that he's going to use a police officer to pull me over so I have to pay a $100 ticket, because that's clearly how God works, which is asinine. But how many times have you been here before? Of where something bad happens in your life, something is going on, maybe with a friend, and at least for me, all right, to this day, I will still think, I'm like, oh, what did I do? What did I do for God to allow this to happen? And let me say this. I saw a shirt the other day. It says, bad theology kills. And it does, right? Like, the way you view God really, really matters. And like, where do we as Christians, where do we get this narrative of that there is this God out there who's waiting for you to screw up so then he can punish you? It has been happening for millenniums, right? I think that's the right word. A long time. It's been happening a really long time. Not so long ago, there's a guy named Jerry Farwell, if you know who he is, right? And Pat Robinson, who leads the 700 Club. And they were talking after 9/11, and Jerry Farwell, who leads Liberty University, who is a very prominent evangelical, he said, you know, the terrorist attacks happened because God needed to punish people. And it was because the ACLU, LGBTQ, and feminism. That's why 9/11 happened. And let me, on the front end, I disagree with Jerry on this one, right? Very heavily. But I heard that before, but I thought it was just like someone made it up, right? I'm like, no one in their right mind would get on camera and say that. And so I looked it up on Snopes. Literally, they said it. And I paused, I sat back, right? I am straight, I am a feminist, right? And I don't work for the ACLU. And I thought back, I'm like, oh my gosh. Think about if you identify in any of those circles, and then also, what about the thousands of people who died? What he's saying is this theology is saying that when something they deem bad or wrong happens, God's going to come and kill thousands of people, and thousands of people after who are being sick, who have cancer, and then thousands and thousands and thousands of families whose lives were forever changed. And then also a whole generation of people who still maybe have some anxiety. Like, God did that to punish feminism? The ACLU, because people love one another. Just think about what kind of God would actually do that. Oddly enough, the way a lot of people view about God, gods would do those sort of things. See, the way that your theology works, the way you view God, matters. Because if you even just take that, right? You just take that, you have to play it all the way through that. You just can't isolate one instance. Well, that was just 9/11. But that would also mean, then, if you have a friend that gets cancer, then where you'd start was, I wonder why God's punishing him. What did he do? What kind of anger is he holding in his heart? Your friend breaks a leg. You're like, oh, I wonder what kind of like sin they did that God needed to punish them to break their leg. It's crazy. But where do we get this? Where do we get this narrative? The Bible. We really do. That leads us to Noah. Now, if you've never read Noah, because we love Noah, especially in like kids programs, big, because we get all three things, right? We get all three things. You can throw the picture up if you want. Is that we have a white person, right? Noah, clearly who's white, right? Can you throw that up? Yeah, see, look at him, right? Noah's not white, right? But I Googled it, every picture I saw was white Noah, right? And we have cute little animals. Look at them. Look at those little pigs, right? I didn't know the beavers are eating the ship. That's not safe. What is going on? Right? They're doomed, right? And you have fluffy animals, you have an ark, you have a nice little boat, and you have cute little water, and then you, of course, have the rainbow at the end. And we love it. The part that we miss out on, that we don't read, is that God got so angry at the human race, he had to unlock the water to kill every single human and animal in the world. We kind of leave that one out, right? So this narrative of God's going to get his $2.50 from Chris through a ticket comes through a story like Noah. And is that the point? Is that a Jesus-looking God? Is that how this works? And I'd say no. So then what's the point of the story of Noah, that we're just supposed to carry like a life preserver around? Is it a story that God can't stand people and he's going to reset it all again? I would say no. I'd say the purpose of the story is something incredibly A, messy, and B, beautiful. And where I hope that we end up is that we, no matter where we're at, and we're in tragedy, we're in crisis, we're in boredom, we're in celebration, we're doing well, that the way that we view God, maybe hopefully today, can be inspired to see a bigger, beautiful God. So let's start. We're going to be reading out of Genesis chapter 6. And I'm going to read the story of Noah, But I'm like jumping because I'm leaving all like the technical parts out of like the actual building the boat, of how long they're on the water. I would encourage you to read it. It is really a great story. But I'm going to give you the highlights. So starting chapter 6, verse 7, God saw that human evil was out of control. People thought evil, imagined evil, evil from morning to night. God was sorry that he made the human race in the first place. Thanks, God, right? It broke his heart. God said, I'll get rid of my ruined creation, make a clean sweep. People, animals, snakes, bugs, birds, the works. I am sorry I made them, for the Bible told me so. Verse 8, but Noah was different. God liked what he saw in Noah. This is the story of Noah. Noah was a good man, a man of integrity in his community. Noah walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. As far as God was concerned, the earth had become a sewer. There was violence everywhere. God took one look and saw how bad it was. Everyone corrupt and corrupting. Life itself corrupt to the core. God said to Noah, it's all over. It's the end of the human race. The violence is everywhere. I'm making a clean sweep. Verse 17. I'm going to bring a flood on the earth that will destroy everything alive under heaven. Total destruction. So then Noah gets on the boat with his family, gets two of every kind of animal. They float on for over 150 days, and they have to wait for it all to dry out. The bird goes out. Remember that? Comes back with the branch. And after they get out of the boat, this is where you pick up. God says, this is what God is saying. Genesis 9, verse 12. This is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and everything living around you and everyone living after you. I'm putting my rainbow in the clouds, a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. From now on, when I form a cloud over the earth and the rainbow appears in the cloud, I will remember my covenant between me and you and everything living, that never again will the floodwaters destroy all life. The rainbow appears in the cloud. I'll see it and remember the eternal covenant between God and everything living and every last living creature on earth. This is the word of the Lord. And it's scary, right? If you've never read this story and all you heard was the nice little kids version of it, you should breathe, right? Because this is a dark picture of this God that we know to be so incredibly good. And it should bring up some questions. You should actually have lots and lots of questions. And let me just say this. If you're ever in a community or a spiritual community or a church, a small group, and you feel threatened that you can't raise your hand and say, can you just read that last part again about he couldn't stand the earth as a sewer? If you can't ask questions, then I would encourage you to go to a place where you can ask questions. I found that people in spirituality feel like it's not my job to ask questions. We just have to read it and believe it. And I would say, read it and then pray about it and talk about it and consider if this is something worth believing, right? That's what healthy people do. So questions that you should have when it comes to Noah is this. Was it a regional flood? Is it the whole world? If it's the whole world, how do they get like koala bears in one part of the earth and polar bears on the other side of the earth? Right? Who checked all the insects to make sure that they're male and female? Right? Seriously, that's a good question. What if they get on there like, oh, they're all males, right? If it took the Egyptians how many years to build the pyramids? That's me, pyramids. If it took them thousands of years with thousands of slaves to build it, how was Jonah and his three sons able to build this boat, right? Eight people managed. What did they do with all, kids would actually appreciate this. What did they do with all the feces, right? How did they make sure that they weren't eating one of the animals, right? If all of a sudden hippopotamus eats the beaver, oh, the beaver's not up there, right? You know, to punish them, of course, like no more beavers, right? But here's the thing. We can ask better questions. Those are good questions. But what I found out, especially me, I'm a very inquisitive person. If you just get stuck on that, and regardless you believe, no, this is literally a story, it was a regional flood, a whole flood, or this is a story or oral tradition they passed on, regardless, we put our energy on the wrong thing. And same way with Jonah and the whale. If you get stuck on the fish, Jonah and the fish, you get stuck on the fish, you're missing the bigger point. And it's distracting you from seeing the point of Jonah is that, is there bias? Is there hatred? Is there unforgiveness? Is there racism? Is there some sort of anger in your heart? And can maybe this God use you and change the narrative? See, the question is, when you read something in the Bible and it disrupts you and you do one of these, like, right? The question that usually comes up is this true or not? And that's a good question. There's a better question. The question is, why is this story being told here? Why is the story of Noah where it's at? And of all the stories, think about it, of all the stories that could be put into this, into Genesis, of all the stories that we put into the Bible, you have to remember, the Bible was not just something that God came down and brought to Chub Lake and said, here you go, all right? Because that's clearly where it would have been if he did that. God didn't write it for us. It was inspired by God, right? To point us back to a good and beautiful God. Someone put the books in order. Someone put the story of Genesis in a particular way because they're trying to tell us a bigger story. So why Noah? That is the better question. Not if it's true. Why? And what is God trying to teach us? Because think about this, right? The pivoting story of in Genesis, we like to think is 1 and 2in creation and 3 when the fall of humanity, right? It's not. It starts with 1 and it's when you get to chapter 12. 1 through 11 is critically important because something happens in 12. In chapter 12, this God goes to this man named Abraham, and he says, Abraham, through you and your people, we're going to change the world. He says, you're going to be a blessing to other people. Your tribe will be a blessing to other tribes, which this is crazy because tribes aren't a blessing to other tribes. Tribes murder other tribes and eat their food. Tribes go around to oppress other people, to enslave other people, because that's how you survive. That's how you won. That's how you woke up the other day to live. And here's a God in this primitive state, in this primitive world, saying, but you're going to be a tribe that blesses other tribes? This is a different kind of God. This is a different kind of people. And it's in that covenant, in that promise that he makes with Abraham, that they go out and they literally change the world. They screw it up. But they are a light to other people. They're going to be a blessing to other people that are different than them. So if that's the pivotal point, then chapters 1 through 11, the authors are trying to get attention of, if we have a different kind of people, why do we have different kind of people? Because we have a different kind of God. Here comes the creation story. The creation story has a story that has been told multiple times in other tribes, in other cultures. But the ending, remember Nikki last week talked about, the ending is different because instead of gods, at the time, would like the story was that they were angry and out of tension. I'm really simplifying this. Out of tension, what came out of the ground was humans, and humans were weak, and they were just futile, and it was like out of wrath. But God tells the same exact story, similar story, but what does he say that they are? He says they are, anybody? Good. They say it's good, right? God over again. And if you were reading that story, if you were one of the people that it was written to, you'd be like, well, no, gods don't call humans good. Then you get to 3, where sin enters the world, and there's violence, Cain and Abel. All of a sudden, they're offering sacrifices. All of a sudden, there's violence everywhere. You get to chapter 6. We're only 4 chapters away from God saying everything's good, and here comes Noah, and what does God say? God says, everyone in this world is terrible. I have to reset everything. And why? Because this is what gods do, right? This is how they viewed gods. This is how they viewed what would happen if all these horrible violence, which is, we're going to talk a little bit, if there's all this violence in this world, there's all these crazy things happening, when a flood comes and kills everyone, obviously you're going to say, yep, God did that, because that's what gods do, but this is a different kind of God. You see, the Noah story, like the creation story, has been told dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of times in other tribes. The story of, I actually wrote it down so I sounded really intelligent, but now you know I'm reading it, so... it is asking better questions. I don't have it anymore. Anyways, all right. It was like one of the earliest manuscripts that we have. It's written on mud. Tells the same story as Noah. Well before anything we have written about Noah. So then we have to ask ourselves, like, this is where you can get caught up asking the wrong questions. Like, well, is it the same story? Is it a similar story? This is a common story that people believed and wrote about gods. So why did this flood narrative get into the Bible then? Because this God is different. The authors are trying to share with us that, like, there's something bigger going on. Why? Because at the end of the story, this God does something different. This God, right? This God makes a promise with people. Rob Bell says, he says this, it's a primitive story, but it's also really, really progressive. I read that. I love that line. This Noah story is very primitive because it starts, like every other flood narrative, starts with every other view of God. God was angry at people. God killed everyone except a select few. But the reason that this becomes so incredibly progressive, because this God, like unlike other gods, would say, don't do it again. Like holding on his hand on the faucet. Like, don't make me turn the faucet back on and reset and bring justice, or not bring justice, bring judgment, right? And bring horrible things and murder and genocide. This God ends the story differently by saying, I love you. I'm making a covenant. I'm making a promise. Gods don't make promises to mere mortals, to humans. And what is the promise saying? I will never do this again. I will never take my vengeance on you and kill everyone with a flood. The flood narrative is now done. And what begins? Love. What begins? Moving to Abraham, where you're going to be a blessing to all different tribes. Can you see the twist in this story? Can you see that this God is inviting the readers that I'm a different kind of God? And thank God that we have a different kind of God. Because when we get stuck in that way of thinking of our theology, the way we view God, of if I don't tithe, then God's going to give me a speeding ticket. If I don't do something incredibly perfect, if I don't read my Bible like enough times in the week, if I don't say the right things, if I stub my toe and I swear, what is God going to come to bring and destroy me so he can prove a point of how strong and how good he is? The Noah story says, I am different. And where it leads is to a progressive God that loves us, to a God that wants to be with us, a God that wants to relate to us. So that's the better question. Why? Why is it in here? So we have just a couple takeaways, and then we can all celebrate. Oh, I think this is on the screen. It says, this story starts like other stories, but it goes somewhere different, it goes somewhere new, and it goes somewhere better. Because really, how do you change a narrative? How do you change a story? How do you change for a whole generation, for a whole culture, or for a whole people who viewed God in this way? How do you change it? You tell a similar story with a bigger ending. You tell a similar narrative that everyone understand the context with the plot twist. That instead of it being God being bad, it's that God is good. So there's three takeaways. First one is this, violence. Right? If the whole point of Noah's story is to, even 1 through 11 is to point to how this God is good and is different than other gods, and then goes on to Abraham, which then much later goes on to Jesus, right? To show that we really do have a different kind of God. We have a Jesus-looking God. There's a dominant story through 1 through 11, actually throughout the whole Bible, is violence. God in Noah's story looked at his people and said there was violence everywhere, and it made him sad, and he had to destroy them. Violence is not, I think this is universally known, not a fan of violence, right? Violence not healthy, but why? Why does violence keep coming up over and over again, and especially Noah's story is this, because Nikki talked about that these kids, your beautiful daughter, right, is made in the image of God, the image bears. And anytime we use violence, anytime that we oppress, anytime we marginalize, anytime we own or we occupy a person in any way, we are dehumanizing them because we are stripping them of the image of God. When I say, well, no, my image of God is better than your image of God, so I'm going to use violence to hurt you, to oppress you, to hold you down, to keep you underneath me, what you're going to get in return is never what you intend. Because anytime we dehumanize people, what we get, that's sin. So violence, and we like, at least for me, I think of violence as maybe in a way of some aggressive attack on someone. We can be violent in many different ways. Have you ever heard of social media? All right? We can be violent. We can be violent with our words. We can be violent by our silence. When we see horrible things, we can be violent with our looks at people. We can be violent with... I'm not going to get in that, right? So violence is not good. The second thing is this, is evolve. Let me start. Maybe some of you here are like, what are we talking about? Here's the thing. God never changes. God never changes. We change, right? In the Bible, it talks a lot about how there's multiple times that Moses prayed and God changed his mind, right? There's this story that happens multiple times, but I firmly believe that we have the same God we did in the Old Testament, this weird story of the God in Proverbs, the God in Psalms, the God that Jesus worships. We have the same God. He doesn't change, we change, and we need to continue to change. In the story of Noah, we see that this God is different. There's an evolution of how we view God. The reader wants us to understand that we can see God bigger, and there's a lot of us, we desperately need that. Like, I'm thankful that as a community, as Christians, that we have evolved, because it is asinine to think that there was a white male who looked at another white woman who was a preacher and preaches all around the world and said, go home. Maybe you heard of that, Beth Moore, right? Like, That's, to me, asinine, to be able to tell another woman you don't belong on a stage because you were born wrong, right? Like, there's a time that we have evolved and said, no, women can be fully incorporated into the whole life of the church because we have this God. It was not too long ago that we said interracial marriage was evil, it was bad. It was not too long ago that we oppressed colored people and used the Bible to do it. We have evolved. Did God change? No. We did. And we need to continue to be able to see that this God is different. And when we can do that, we get to grow. And that's where you get a good and beautiful life. Third thing is, so violence evolving. And the last one is this new narrative. And this is where I end. When I was praying, the story about me getting a ticket, right? And like God needs it, $2.50. Like it makes me laugh. But I lived a good chunk of my life where I really believed that. And I just feel like maybe there's some people here where the Noah story, you're still stuck on, no, God came and he needed to kill everyone, including me. And I'll never be good enough. I'll never be hip enough. I'll never do enough right things for God to let me in, whatever that good club is. And my encouragement to you today is like, let's reimagine this God. Let's like get a new narrative, because the narrative that we have is Jesus. And what Jesus says in John 10:10 is that he came to bring life and life to the full. There is a good and beautiful life that's not too far off. It's not too distant. And if you're here and you're stuck in that, God is angry at me, God will never accept me, I'm going to pray a little bit, and I'm just going to ask that maybe God would come and reveal something even bigger and even more beautiful than that narrative. Let's stand. Please. So God, we love you, and I thank you. I thank you that you are different. And even the idea, the word of holy means that you are different than us. You are set apart. But in that difference, you don't use it against us. In that holiness, you don't say you're never going to make it. What you invite us to is to be Jesus-looking people, that you want to connect with us, that you want to reach out, that the story of you is different. And so we receive that. And I pray for my friends who are here today who feel isolated, feel lonely, who feel discarded, who feel rejected, who feel stressed out. God, I pray that you'd come and you'd bring life and life to the full. And that through your Holy Spirit, that you will transform that narrative, that way that we worship you, the way that we see you, the way that we view you, because that shapes everything we do. And I pray for my friends who are here, who are celebrating these beautiful little kids and family. I pray, God, that you will use us to continue to shape not just these kids' lives, but that we can help shape and influence the people in our community every single day into a good and beautiful. So use us, God, and we love you. Amen. So thank you, friends, for being in this space with us. Enjoy the rest of your day.